I love scotch. 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 Scotch.
Yep. Have another whiskey.
If you'd like to speak to me in person, press 1. If you'd like to order drugs, press hash.
I had a gentleman in the crowd that was like, tell me how to drink Glenfiddich. And I was like, I will not do that.
Yep.
You drink Glenfiddich how you want to drink Glenfiddich.
Wear a cowboy hat in Los Angeles and look at the amount of looks you get.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. This is the most flamboyant city on earth. You wear a cowboy hat, people look at you like you are like an alien.
The Beatles came on and they picked me up on his shoulder. George Harrison is as close to me as that wall now. I went, all right, George, all right. And he went, f*** off. And that was the closest I ever came to the Beatles.
We have a whiskey while we...
Yeah, let's do it again.
Yeah.
Cheers, long.
Cheers.
So welcome to United States of Dramerica, and we've got quite a guest for you all this week. We have a man who is a Super Bowl winner, a Super Bowl loser, the first punter to throw a touchdown pass in an NFL playoff game. We have a man who has played for the team with my favorite name in professional sports, the Saskatchewan Roughriders, and... he is a Swansea City fan. He is a poker player. He is a whiskey drinker. Welcome to the podcast, John Ryan.
Thanks for having me, Dad. That was like my favorite the way I've ever been announced before. The best introduction I've ever had. I appreciate that.
I'm delighted. I wanted to cover the full week. So look, normally on these things, obviously I'm the podcast host, so I ask the questions. But I'm going to let you choose which topic we start with, because there's so much to do. So obviously, okay. You know, the Super Bowl is coming up. So I've got a Super Bowl question I could ask you. I have a Tom Brady question I can ask you. But if you want, we could do Swansea City. We can do pandemic, or we can go straight into whiskey. What do you want to do first?
I like to start where my heart is, and that's Swansea football right now.
Okay. Swansea football. All right. So obviously it is... You are known for many things, obviously, particularly in Seattle and in your native Canada. But you have picked a non-Premier League team from a part of Wales to be the team that you support. So why are you supporting that particular football or soccer team, as I guess we have to call it?
Right. It's funny because I never played soccer growing up, which is very unusual for a guy that's a punter in the NFL. I think every punter, every kicker at some point played soccer, as we call it in America. I never did. So I never really got into it and was never really on TV a lot in Canada. And I had some teammates a few years back, 5 or 6 years back, and they're big time. They one of them followed Chelsea, one followed Man U. And so I kind of started watching with them. I was like, I love this game. And then it's like the next thing you know, well, not have to support someone. I have to follow someone. And I started watching a lot of it. And I think the year that I started watching it was a really good year for the FA Cup for Swansea. And I was like, oh, this team, I did my research, you know. I found a city that kind of, you know, the kind of city that I wanted to go to, the kind of people that I wanted to be part of, the kind of fan base I wanted to be. And just this kind of like, this team is kind of, had a lot of like dirt to them, you know. They weren't Man U, they weren't Man United or Man City or one of these big teams. And it's just like kind of a team that I wanted to get behind. I loved the way they played, and I just started following them, and just kind of like I fell in love with them from there.
Amazing, because obviously, as a British person, you don't pick a team picks you based on where you're from or where your family are from. And I've been through what you've done with soccer. Obviously, I did with American sports because I'm not born in America or Canada. Right. I can pick any team I like. So, you know, I picked my NFL team was picked when I was a kid because I liked their helmets and their quarterback was called Boomer. So I was a Bengals fan as a kid for no reason. And it's sort of quite fun picking a sport, you know, picking a team yourself and particularly one who's not the best team because it's boring. You could have just picked Barcelona like everyone in America. But it's good that you picked a team who aren't very good.
It's very unique as I played in the NFL, and for all those years, we'd have a lot of people come from Europe, and they'd be like, "Oh, I'm a huge Seattle fan. I love the Seahawks." And I always kind of wonder, like, why? Like, what is it about us that you love? Because you could have picked any team you wanted, and you chose us. So it wasn't really a geographical thing where it is in so many, you know, like where we were born is the team that we root for, pretty much across North America. and obviously in Europe too. And when you're born into a country that doesn't really have that sport at the time, and you find a team across the sea, it's pretty interesting to see how that happens.
Obviously, there is, as you said, there's a link between the sports. Like recently, Harry Kane, who obviously is, you know, one of England's top strikers, has said that he loves the NFL, and he said that when he retires, he'd love to see if he can make it as a kicker. If you had played soccer as a kid and were good and had a choice between punting or playing soccer, knowing you could make it to the top, which would you prefer? Which would you have preferred to do?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good question. So I grew up my whole life playing football. I started playing football when I was 7 years old. I'm 39 now, and I'm still playing. So that's been my passion. So right now, it would be easy to be like, oh, I wouldn't have mind trying something different and played soccer if I knew that I could have made it to that level. It just seems like the fans are so passionate over there. It's a lot like when I played in Seattle, the fans are so passionate. But I feel like sometimes it gets to a different level over there with the hooliganism and all that stuff. So I think I probably would have to stick with football, American football. But being able to play soccer at that level is pretty amazing.
So obviously, you know, you are a very well-known and very well-liked Seattle athlete. Another very well-known and very well-liked Seattle athlete has just signed for Swansea. So what's your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think it's really cool. Jordan Morris just signed. He'll be available off the bench tomorrow, it looks like, for the game against Brentford. So I think I'm a member of these Stateside Jacks is the fan club here in the U.S. And it's all anyone's talked about for the last 2 weeks. It's a massive deal. I don't know if it's as massive a deal to people in Wales. I think it's one of those things where, especially when an American's coming in, it's kind of like, let's wait and see. You know, we don't want to get too excited, and we'll support him when he does something for us. So I'm pretty excited for it. Being able to, you know, I used to watch him play in the MLS for the Sounders. He grew up on an island right across from where I lived there for 10 years. So it kind of feels, Seattle kind of feels like my home. It kind of feels like the hometown boy is now going to the team that I root for. So it's pretty cool.
Fantastic. Now, look, this is meant to be a whiskey podcast. And first time we met, we were drinking whiskey together. Sorry, the only time we met, we should have met once a month since we first met, because we met at a monthly poker game, which obviously stopped because of the pandemic. But you were drinking whiskey that night, as was I. We're at the home of guest number 17 on this podcast, Jeff Cohen, Chunk from the Goonies. But we were drinking some of his extensive whiskey. So what whiskey have you got at your end tonight, John?
I have a Johnny Walker Blue Label.
Oh, very good.
I am drinking tonight. I do enjoy whiskey. I don't drink it a lot. So when I do drink it, I like to have some of the stuff that I enjoy and some of the maybe considered better stuff. I don't know.
Brilliant. So I try and pair my whiskey with a guest. So obviously in the old days, when you agreed to do this, we were meant to meet in real life. I would have brought a whiskey. We would have shared it. Whatever's left, you would have kept. But obviously, we're drinking different whiskeys. So I was thinking, right, what's the whiskey for you? You know, should I drink Penderyn, which is the Welsh whiskey, because of your love of Swansea? Should I try and find a whiskey that's relevant to your career? Should I drink a Canadian whiskey, maybe? And I thought, no, I want to do Scottish. So interesting, I was going to do Johnny Walker Blue just because I saw some stuff recently where the New York Giants, a couple of the players from New York Giants who had been given Johnny Walker Blue in some promotion related, I think, to their Super Bowl win, and they were trying to decide whether they should open it or not. But what I'm actually going to know, the whiskey I've picked is, it's a little bit tenuous, this. I know two Super Bowl winners. You are one. The other one is a chap called Lawrence Tynes, who is a place kicker for the New York Giants, who was born in Scotland. Do you know Lawrence?
I do, yes. Yes, I do. We actually have the same agent. So I've known him, played against each other for years. The year that he won the Super Bowl, he beat me, because I was playing for the Green Bay Packers at the time, in the NFC Championship to go to the Super Bowl. He kicked the game-winning field goal in overtime. So
he is, I think he was the first Scotsman to win the Super Bowl, because he was born in Greenock. And so I have picked a whiskey related to his place of birth. So I'm drinking an Isle of Arran whiskey, which is 26 miles from where the other Super Bowl winner I know was born. So that's my slightly tenuous whiskey link. So anyway, cheers, John. It's great. So let's talk Super Bowl. So the Super Bowl's coming up. You've been to two with different experiences. Describe, if it's possible, what it's like to be part of something as ridiculous and enormous as the Super Bowl.
It's truly an out-of-body experience. You know, it's you have a two-week build-up from the NFC Championship game to the Super Bowl, and it's a media frenzy like you've never experienced in your life. Football at times is, you know, our number one focus, but almost seems like a sideshow on those 2 weeks leading up, just because it's just absolute craziness. Everything from police escorts everywhere we went with helicopters, shutting down freeways just for us to get to practice. It was things like that. And, you know, you go to the media day, the Tuesday before the big game, and it's just like you're in a hockey arena, and it's just the floor is absolutely crammed, packed with media people from around the world. And so it's just everything was just so big that the first time I felt comfortable at all in those 2 weeks is the day I stepped on the field for the game. I was like, okay, this is what I'm used to. I'm used to being on the field. I'm used to being on this green patch right here. This is where I'm comfortable. The last 13 days were completely uncomfortable, and now I'm here at the game. And the part that really you'd think would be the least comfortable place is really when the players are like, okay, this is what we do. We're good now.
Because obviously, I mean, and please take this the right way. Of all the players in that Seahawks team, you were obviously not the most famous. And obviously, because of your position, you're not the one that the media are desperately talking about all the time. So the media scrum would have been around some of your teammates. But obviously, because it is such a huge event and everyone's looking for an angle, were you sort of pursued by the Canadian media in a way that the American media were pursuing some of your teammates?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it was, that's just the idea of how huge it is. You know, most times, you know, your top five players, like guys that get interviewed after practice, after games, and those are the guys that want to be like up on the media stand during that media day. But there's so much media there that for me is, you know, as you said, I was the punter. I'm not the guy that you want to get the dish on. And I stood there and did interviews for an hour straight for the entire time. And as well, yeah, a lot of Canadian media, which is pretty cool because you know, not a lot of Canadians had the opportunity to play in the Super Bowl, so it's pretty cool.
So in the game itself, obviously as a punter, you're in a slightly odd position because you're only called onto the field of play if they have failed to either score or, you know, obviously make the first down. So particularly at the beginning of the game, you know, you're there, it started, your nerves are settled, ironically, because you're there. Are you sort of desperate? Are you desperate for a quick three and out just so you can get to touch the ball, even though it's bad for the team? Or how did that work?
No, it is weird being a punter because it's, you know, it's the one player that your team doesn't want to see on the field. You know, it's a very different situation than everyone else. And usually when a punter has his best game, your team usually loses. You know, so that's always kind of a weird thing. So in that game, it was one of those things I was like, I just want to get on the field. I don't necessarily want our team to do a three and out, but I just want to get on the field to get those nerves out. And as luck would have it, I don't go on the field till the fourth quarter to punt. We're up 22-0 at half. We're up 29-0 after the first play of the second half. So we were just like, we were rolling. So luckily, as a punter, you also hold for field goals. So that kind of gave me the opportunity to just get on the field and get like my nerves settled a little bit. And then that game that we won, the Super Bowl 48, I punted one time, and it was halfway through the fourth quarter and the game was already completely over.
But you still won a Super Bowl, which must be an extraordinary thing. How does it work? Because obviously it is, you know, obviously because it's America, you're called the world champions. But, you know, it is the absolute pinnacle. For the next sort of month or so, is your agent fielding calls from everybody wanting to do bits and pieces with you? You know, is it a real frenzy afterwards?
It really was. It really was. It was just like nonstop between the parties and the celebrations, the parades. I got to meet Obama. I got to meet the Prime Minister of Canada, Stephen Harper, at the time. So I got to go to the White House and the parliamentary buildings in Canada. And it was just like a whole month of like sleeping a couple hours a night, partying, doing all these media requests, celebrating with family. It was just an unbelievable experience. It was a very tiring experience, but it was unbelievable.
Obviously, you know, you like a drink. Did you drink much in those days, or were you quite sensible?
I mean, after the Super Bowl, it was on. You know, I think, I always had Friday night a couple glasses of wine with dinner. I was a guy that never would shy away from that even during the season. But, you don't play in the NFL. It's pretty high stress, and you don't get a lot of opportunity to, you know, let your hair down, if you will. So when the season's over, it's usually a bit of a party, especially when you end that season in the Super Bowl.
So, yeah, I can't ask you about the first Super Bowl without asking you about the second. Right. So I guess the first thing is, you only got to the second because of something spectacular that you did in the playoff game. So, you know, I think if I've got my stats right, and I don't know if you're one of these people who know their stats inside out, I think you've got a 75% completion rate on your throws in the regular season.
Yeah, I think I do. I was like 3 for 4 in the regular season. I think the one pass that I threw was like on a bad snap, and I just threw it away. I don't think any of them were that impressive, but they all got the job done, you know?
Yeah.
And that game, the NFC Championship back in 2014 to go to the Super Bowl, it was the third quarter. We were down, I think, 16-0. Didn't look good. And I was fortunate enough to be put in a situation where we did a fake field goal, and I was able to throw a touchdown pass. And it was kind of those 8 seconds were the highlight of my career, I'd say. It was pretty cool. And it's pretty cool to go back to Seattle and have those people still talk about that. It means a lot to me. So that kind of sparked our comeback on that day. And as it happened, we went on and won in overtime, went to the Super Bowl.
Extraordinary. Because obviously you practice every type of, you know, trick play, and also just, you know, bad snaps where you have to do it even if it's not quite what you're hoping for. When this was set up, obviously you knew that this wasn't an accident. This was going to happen. Did you know that a punter had never thrown a touchdown pass in a playoff game? Do you think about any of that stuff? Or you know what you got to do and you just got to do it?
I wasn't even aware of that. And I think it's so funny because when you when it happens in the game, it happens so quick. Like I'm literally running on the field. I look to Pete. We had the play was called Charlie Brown, where I lift the ball up and run around and throw it. Pete just looks at me, Pete Carroll, our head coach, just goes, Charlie Brown. And you just kind of snap into game mode right away where you're like, I'm looking for our tells. We had to, you know, if certain guys were lined up in certain places, I was going to call the playoff. So you kind of just go straight into that game mode. I'm watching everything. And then, you know, as I said before, it's kind of like an out-of-body experience. It happens so quick. And it's just, it's over like that. And I mean, thank goodness it went the way it did, because I might not be able to go back to Seattle if it did. People would have hated me.
In practice, when you practiced that one, how many times did you make a mess of either like picking the ball up and making your run or the throw? And equally, the guy who's catching it isn't exactly, you know, your top wide receiver. So how many times did he also just make a mess of catching your even perfect throws?
What was so fascinating about that play, a lot of times you'll have a play in like that you'll practice all season long. You'll practice, you know, have whatever, every Wednesday and every Thursday during practice. You'll practice it, you know, 2 or 3 times for an entire season. That particular play, we didn't have it in. We put it in on Thursday. Thursday was the first time I ever saw that play. So that was 2 practices before the game. We practiced it during our walkthrough, which is kind of like a dress rehearsal for practice. We kind of walked through it a few times. In practice, we ran it maybe 3 times, and then boom, it was into the game. You know, so most of the time, plays like that, you run hundreds and hundreds of times. But I mean, to the coach's credit, they just saw a bit of a weakness or a situation we could get them in that was beneficial for us, and they went with it, and it worked.
Extraordinary. Can you remember when you ran off after that moment? Did Pete Carroll say something to you? Do you remember what it was?
I don't remember. It was such a crazy experience. I remember I saw a picture of me hugging him and then hugging another coach. And it was just like, it was kind of a 2-minute party for me on the sideline, just because it was, you know, something that doesn't happen every day. And obviously it only happened to me once in my whole 17-year career. So it was pretty cool. But I don't remember the exact things that were said, but I still have pictures of a lot of those hugs on the sidelines.
Amazing. So you'd never thrown a touchdown pass even in college?
Nothing. Not in high school, not in college, not when I was a kid. I mean, that was my one and only from the time it was like Pee Wee football when I was 7 till all the way up to the NFL.
presumably you didn't have throwing touchdown passes in your contract as a bonus because it.
No, unfortunately not, because that would have been a nice one right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Extraordinary. So look, obviously that was an amazing moment, but then you went to the Super Bowl and you were playing against Tom Brady, who obviously still looks the same today as he did then, I think.
He might look better.
he does look better. Because you'd been to a Super Bowl, in the lead up to the second one, where you knew about the press circus and all that sort of stuff, how was the approach to the game different? Did it feel very, very comfortable, or was it still just as exciting?
It was definitely as exciting. It felt different in that we knew exactly what was coming. You know what was expected of us. We knew the media was going to be crazy. We knew everything from, one of the most stressful things is the week before you set up your whole entire family. I set up 18 people to go to the game. So you're like buying flights, you're buying hotels, you're buying $2,000 tickets is what the game tickets cost. You're setting all this up, and once that was done, it was good. So I kind of knew to expect that again, to have a 1 week of just like dealing with travel itineraries. And it wasn't comfortable, but it was a little more familiar.
Yeah. Describe that game.
It was, a crazy game. It was, like it happens when a lot, like a close Super Bowl happens, we're up by 10 points in the fourth quarter. And we feel good. Then all of a sudden, just like that, we go 3-and-out. They score. We get the ball back. We go 3-and-out. Get 3-and-out again, and they score. And it's just like, whoa! Like we were just up by 10 points, and it feels like it was 5 minutes later. And all of a sudden, we're down by 4, and now we get the ball back, and we're scrambling to go in to score to drive the length of the field to try to win the game. And as it happened, we're driving the ball down, and all of a sudden now, the whole momentum turns and it looks like we're going to come back and win the game at the last second. And, we throw an interception on the 1 yard line. And one of the most painful losses, I think, in the history of sports right there, to lose a Super Bowl on the 1 yard line is about as bad as it gets.
Yeah. And obviously, that was a controversial call and everyone has their view on why you just didn't use your battering ram to run it over. Why would you risk it and all that sort of stuff? I mean, I'm not looking for you to dish dirt, but from your point of view as a team, after you walked off, last year you'd had a month of parties and all that stuff. How did it play out? Presumably you walk off, everyone's upset. Do you all sort of go home and no one talks to anyone for a month? I mean, what happened afterwards?
One of the most bizarre locker rooms I'd ever been a part of after that game, because there was guys literally laying on the floor crying, guys throwing stuff, guys swearing, guys yelling. It was just like a whole room of just mixed emotions of guys just absolutely losing their crap one way or the other. And it was a weird thing because we were a very tight team. We were really good for 3 or 4 or 5 years there. So we kind of had the same guys together. And it was weird. It was kind of like a month or two of guys not really talking to one another or kind of keeping you to yourself. And, in the NFL, you go back in the middle of April after that game. And, it took a while to feel normal again because that was that's a painful loss. And I honestly, I don't think that team was ever the same again, to be honest. We didn't make it back to the Super Bowl again. And they kind of broke the team up after a year after that.
Because often with these things, it's the other way around. So, you have a near miss, it galvanizes everybody, and then the year after they come back and win it. Mm. Like that's sort of in the movies, that's how it works. Yeah. Also, there's plenty of sports story, not just in the NFL, of teams, learning so much from the pain of the defeat that the year they come back afterwards stronger. But I guess because you did it the other way round, it must have been a very strange experience. And the last game was the one that you lost.
Very strange, but at the same time now as I have the ability to look back on my career being right at the very absolute tail end of it, I can look back and kind of I don't think about that game very often. Whereas if we hadn't won the year before and that was my only Super Bowl and it turned out like that, I think it would be something that would really stick with me. Don't get me wrong, I wanted to win more than anything, but I think I have that ability as a guy that's played a while and getting older now that I can look back and kind of the win meant more to me than the loss hurt me. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking forward to this Super Bowl, because of, I don't know how exactly it's all going to play out, but because of the pandemic, you know, it's not going to be the same media circus. It's not going to be 2 weeks in the, you know, in the city. I assume they're going to fly in the night before and all that sort of stuff. So just, does that help the players because they actually don't have the distractions? Does it spoil the experience? What do you think it will be like for people?
I agree with both those things. I think it helps the players, and I think it spoils the experience. You know, because you know, that those 2 weeks leading up, as I said before, how uncomfortable they were. It was an experience that I'll, you know, tell my nieces and nephews about in 40 years, because it was so crazy and such a thing that not so few people get to experience. So I feel bad that those guys don't get to experience that, but at the same time, I think it helps them. You know, to have the same normalcy. Training at their own facility, you know, probably flying in a night or two before the game like they would for any other game, as opposed to flying in 7 or 8 days before and living in a hotel and dealing with all that. And, you know, they're not going to have to deal with the press the same way. You know, most of the press will be over Zoom calls, I assume. So it's definitely going to be different for them. So I kind of feel bad that experience is taken away from them, but I think it's also going to benefit them come Sunday.
Yeah. Do you have a prediction you want to give us?
You know, I think KC is a better football team. I think they're, in my opinion, seven plus points better than Tampa Bay. But Tampa Bay has this one freaking guy named Tom Brady. I tell you, it's hard to count that guy out. I mean, he's 43 years old, been doing this for whatever it is, 20 plus years, and he looks as good now as he did in 2001. So, I mean, I know better than to bet against Tom Brady. Can't stand the guy just because he's so damn good. But I find it hard to bet against him.
Is there a part of you that wants to see a punter throw a touchdown?
No. I want to keep that.
You want that to be you. So, like, here's a question about punting. It's fascinating. When you watch games, and maybe I'm slightly overgeneralizing here, but there's two types of punters. When it comes to a run back, there are the punters who sort of, they see the guy running and they sort of try and pretend that they're going to make a tackle, but you know they don't want to, and some of them actually don't pretend very well and sort of just like jump out of the way. And there's other people who just are very excited for the opportunity to bring somebody down and go flying in.
Yeah.
You're the latter, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I'm excited, but I've never really shied away from a hit. You know, I've always liked to get in there. It's one of those things that usually when that guy gets to you, you usually, you know, he just beat 10 of your teammates, and now you have one of the best athletes in the world running full tilt at you, and you're just trying to survive, basically. You know, you're not necessarily trying to make a big hit. You're just trying to find a way to get him down, whether it by the back of his shoulder pads or a shoelace tackle. You just do whatever you can just to flail your body at him and get some piece of him.
Yeah, because I think you've got, I think this is right, I think you had 9 solo tackles in your...
Yeah, I had a few. I was actually watching a little highlight thing the other day on punters tackles. I think it might have been some kind of social media thing because it wasn't mainstream media. And I think I had 3 or 4 highlights on there of tackles. So I was pretty proud of that looking back.
Very good. Because I was as part of my research, because there's some things I remember. Like, you know, I remember your touchdown pass. And, you know, I remember seeing you play and watching you. But I was just watching some highlights as prep for this. There's a couple of things I don't remember. But there were some extraordinary runs that you did. Some ended with some quite remarkable and painful looking injuries. You got like flipped over. On one, and then there's one I think you against the Rams you sort of let go of the ball and then recovered it, and then someone destroyed it.
For some reason, no matter what I was going to do in the NFL, if we were going to do a trick play, it was going to be something unbelievably amazing, like throwing a touchdown pass in the NFC Championship, or be something where I was getting knocked out cold, or just do something completely stupid. And it went, as you said, you watch some of the highlights from my career, it's gone both ways. You know, I've broken my nose, I broke my ankle. Got completely knocked out on the hit against the Rams, you said. So it was kind of all or nothing when it came to me and doing anything other than punting.
Amazing. So look, when we first met, one of the things I found most fascinating was, obviously it's exciting to meet, you know, a Super Bowl winner, but I actually was almost more excited about the CFL part of it. Because it's not, obviously, the CFL is not the NFL, obviously. And I think Americans definitely sneer at the CFL.
Right.
But, you know, I went to university in Canada and I watched, I probably have seen more live CFL games than I have NFL games in, you know, in stadium. I love the CFL. Obviously you're a Canadian, but what's your view on that league and its value?
It's an absolutely fantastic league. The level of football is really high. It's a completely different game than the NFL game. You know, it's different rules. So it's a very entertaining. It's a lot of throwing, a lot of big plays. It's the big field. You really give some of those faster guys the opportunity to get the edge and make some really, really great plays. As you said, as we talked about Swansea before, about how you decide who your football team is. I grew up, born and raised in Saskatchewan. So I was born with, Saskatchewan Roughriders football in my crib. You know, it's just like, it's in your blood. I had season tickets since 1989 until I got drafted to play in the CFL. And so this last year, to be able to go back, I got to play for my hometown team. Last season was kind of a pretty special way to come closer to the end of my career.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you about the end of the career. So obviously, you were due to play in 2020, but obviously there was no season, which is obviously an enormous shame. But you're still an actor. You know, if somebody called you up and offered you something, you're ready to go?
I'm ready to go. Yeah, you know, I still work out 6 days a week. I'm on the field 3 days a week. As you said, I was on a contract for 2020, and unfortunately, our season was canceled. And now I've gotten calls to come back for the 2021 season. And as I get older, I know I can physically still do it. It's just getting harder now that I've kind of have some of my own business ventures and things that I want to do outside of football. There's going to become a day where you have to kind of choose one or the other, because you can't have one foot in on two different things like that. So it's obviously getting close to that day, but we'll see when that day will come.
And did you get close this year? Because obviously there was a lot of coronavirus wiping out half of the roster stuff happening, and lots of, in specialist positions, people coming in into practice squads, you know, the week before. I mean, there were some people playing in the playoffs who I think had come out of nowhere, 10 days before games or less. Did you get close to anything this year?
I didn't think I would, but I actually got calls from 5 different NFL teams that were interested in, you know, either their punter ended up passing coronavirus protocol, or they ended up going with another guy. But I was happy just to get calls from teams to know that I'm still out there, my name's still on their list. So some teams express interest, but you know, I think that has kind of passed now. You know, being out of the game now after, you know, this season being over, I think it's more going to be the CFL where I kind of closed my career out.
Yeah. And I mean, if you could choose, would you, because of your history and your roots, if you had a choice between NFL or CFL for one more year, would you pick CFL?
You know, it's tough, because I absolutely adore the CFL. You know, growing up watching it and being able to go back. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of widely considered the greatest football league in the world is the NFL. And when you have the opportunity to play at the top level, you want to play at that top level. But as I say in quotations here, it's a great consolation prize to be able to play in the Canadian Football League, which is, you know, as we said, it's a tremendously high level of football, and kind of a privilege for me to go back to Canada and play there.
Yeah, absolutely. When you see, obviously they're completely different positions, but when you see Brady still doing it at his age and Gronk coming out of his sort of CBD retirement and then, you know, coming back to, you know, and obviously he's now going to be in a Super Bowl and probably will score a touchdown at some point. Does that sort of thing make you think, yeah, you know, I'm sort of, well, they're about my age. I can do this as well.
Not really. I mean, guys like Tom Brady are the exception, not the rule. You know, that's a once in a lifetime type player, just for how good he's been and for his longevity. So when I look at my position now, and it's weird because when I first got in the NFL, to get a job in the NFL, you basically have to beat out like a 37 or 38 year old to get a job. Mm. And now it's not like that at all. You know, there's very few punters over the age of 30 now. They're all young, strapping young lads, very, very strong and very good. So that position's definitely changed. So although I'd love to play for many more years, I look at a guy like Tom Brady, but that's definitely, as I said, the exception, not the rule.
So you haven't been living on the Tom Brady diet for the last 15 years, which I think is no alcohol and only certain types of fruit. And I mean, I think it's quite legendary, the precision in which he diets. You're not on that diet.
Yeah, the best nutrition, the best workout plan for a guy who still has a dad bod. I'll say that.
Yeah.
But I always joke about how much I hate Tom Brady, and I hate him so much because he's the best football player to ever do it, in my opinion. I love to watch him, and I just love to bitch about him too.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of people do. Fantastic. So nowadays, when you're not training, how are you spending your time apart from watching Swansea?
Right. Well, that's definitely the highlight of my week right now during this quarantine especially they play in the championship. You know, they play two games a week almost every week, and it's a nice way to break up your week and then start your weekend. But I have a lot of business ventures that I am involved with, and in mostly in baseball. My partner and I own 6 different minor league baseball teams and 1 professional rugby team that we're investors in now. So that's kind of one of those things that I kind of got into as a hobby. You know, I bought 1 baseball team with a friend, and then all of a sudden it became something that was more like a retirement plan than just a hobby. And it's grown and grown. So that takes up quite a bit of my time dealing with that stuff. And it's been fun. It's kind of, you know, growing up, my dream to play football was, you know, that was dream number 1, and dream 1A was to own baseball teams. And so when the time comes here, I do have to move on. It's I'm not leaving my dream to go do something I don't want to do. I'm leaving dream 1 to go to dream 1A. So it's nothing that I'm not looking forward to, for sure.
So rugby's interesting. So actually, I have had the pleasure of having a Seattle Seahawks Super Bowl ring on my finger once, because I was at an event we ran in Seattle when I was with the British government, which was, I think it was just before the Rugby World Cup in what must have been, when it was in the UK, so it must have been 2017. I think we did an event up in Seattle where we brought together a couple of the US Eagles rugby players and a couple of guys from the Seahawks to talk about the similarities and differences between rugby and NFL, and the fact that most of the Eagles, I think, were college football players who didn't quite make it, and then some of the positions are similar. So you're obviously a rugby fan.
A little bit. I'm learning more all the time. When I was in Seattle, as you said, we took on a whole new style of tackling that no one had done yet in football, and it was just copying the way they tackle in rugby. Hmm. And we brought in, you know, different USA coaches and stuff to teach our guys, and we completely changed the way we tackle compared to other football teams. And I think it was that year we won the Super Bowl. So, you know, I always thought that was pretty cool. And it's just such a tough game, you know. And I remember in the Olympics when I started watching the rugby sevens last Olympics, and I just was like, wow, really was taken aback by the game and just the pace of it and the brutal toughness of it. But also just such a beautiful game.
Well, it's too late for you now, because rugby is not a game you want to take up late in life. It's too dangerous. But if you could have played it as a youngster, do you think it's a game, given your size and also the fact you like getting stuck in, do you think it's a game that you would have enjoyed? You know, no pads, just crashing into people?
I think it would have been. Because, you know, I was a fairly fast guy in my younger day, and I, you know, wasn't scared of, you know, the rucking and the mauling and getting in on stuff like that. And I could also kick the ball pretty well. So I think I would have been a decent rugby player. But as you said, it's not at 39 years old. I'm not going down to the park with the boys and playing, because it's not good for your health at this point. But I love being a part of it and, you know, watching it.
So who's the team you're involved with?
The Dallas Jackals. It's a major league rugby team. We were set to play 2021. It was going to be our inaugural season. And now we have to push it back to 2022 with everything that's going on. But it's going to be a lot of fun kind of being a part of that.
Brilliant. This is fascinating. I'd love to keep going, but podcasts have got to stick to a certain length, otherwise they don't work. So we're going to go to the last question, which is, if you could drink any whiskey with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be, what would it be, and where would it be?
That's a great question. I'm a big baseball fan. There's a whiskey, Cooperstown whiskey, that I like, and it kind of keeps on the theme, because I'd love to, you know, sit down with Jackie Robinson, who unfortunately passed a while ago, but to be able to sit down and, you know, pick his brain about, you know, what it was like to hear his whole story. You know, I mean, if there was podcasts back then, he would be definitely a guy you'd love to have on your podcast to hear his story. So I think, you know what, it'd be Jackie Robinson probably in a dugout somewhere at a major league ballpark.
Brilliant. Drinking Cooperstown whiskey. Very good. John Ryan, this has been fascinating. Thank you for your honesty and your insights. And, you know, I hope at some point we can go back to playing poker together, even though I think I remember that night. I don't think you knocked me out, but you were, I think you came third that night and I was out long before you. So I'm not sure I want to play too much poker with you, but it'd be nice to have a drink together at least.
Hey, those nights were all about hanging out and having some whiskey and enjoying some time with some good friends.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Thanks very much, John.
Anytime.
I love scotch. 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 Yep.
And don't forget to not just follow us on Twitter and Instagram at US of Dramerica, but also ask us questions and comment and say nice things.
And please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. And if the mood takes you, you can leave us a review, as feedback is always welcome.
And drink whiskey. Slán te bhfear.